Ladies and gents, I want to welcome you to the first ever Students Representative Forum. This is a new initiative in student democracy for a new generation of student leaders. This is the first time we've brought together the Students Representative Council, Student Services Council, school presidents, and the heads of halls. And Patrick and I would like to take this opportunity to talk to you about a new direction that we're taking in student representation. We're going to change up the agenda slightly for this. Patrick's going to kick off with some context, and then we'll take questions for the clarification, a few questions for clarification, and then I'm going to start my speech, and we'll open the debate for a longer debate right after that. I'm opening this with a little bit of sadness that this beginning of this initiative has been marred by university action. With no warning, not even an email in advance, they closed the quad, cancelled a peaceful student debating event because they were scared that students exercising their democratic right to protest might spoil graduation. And I think it speaks volumes for the maturity and integrity of the student body that such protests that do take place tomorrow will in fact be celebrating the new graduates and the excellence and openness for which St Andrews should stand. I'd like hope that in future the management will show similar qualities. I have to say this action leads me to question the respect that the university's management has for its students. So tonight, I want to issue you with a challenge. Prove them wrong. Embody tonight the best of St Andrews students. Be bold in your ideas and articulate in your arguments. You are the individuals that St Andrews students have chosen to represent them. Do them proud.
How to follow that? Okay, so again, I'd echo what Sam has already mentioned about the change of the venue for this evening, which is unfortunate and hopefully hasn't deterred too many people who have made their way into the quad. I think that as we move forward with graduations tomorrow, with what is something of a general strike, but UCU Action in St Andrews, which celebrates higher education, where we'll be linking up and joining together with the UCU to defend our education and a public higher education, again speaks volumes that the university management response is to get in private security guards in order to guard the quad, where we, the elected representative of the students, are not allowed entry, and that's been policed by private security without any prior warning. I'm going to start off just by giving a little bit of context, and then Sam will move on and talk a little bit about his ideas and a philosophy for what higher education can be. So I'm going to look at the UK context for higher education, the Scottish context, and what the situation is in St Andrews. Now, that's something of a chronological approach as well, because the agenda being set by Westminster and then refined by the Scottish government, and then it's under those circumstances that the University of St Andrews has decided this summer and this autumn to put up tuition fees for rest of UK students, amongst other things as well. So in the UK, we've adopted, quoting the Times Higher Educational Supplement, a confused and chaotic system. Now, this is despite the fact that the Times Higher Education World Rankings, which came out just last month, found the United Kingdom to be second in terms of getting value for money through public investment in higher education. Per dollar spent, we have the second amount of universities in the top 200 in the world after Switzerland. Now, according to Howard Hodgson, who is a professor of modern history and intellectual thought at Oxford, the United States offers an unimpressive performance in per capita terms and very poor value for money. Although many of the world's very best universities are private, all the world's best university systems are public. All this puts a fresh onus on the UK Minister for Universities and Science and on his counterparts in other countries to provide equally clear and compelling evidence to justify radical market-driven reforms. So instead of the UK government adopting the attitude of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, they seem to have adopted the attitude if it ain't broke, let's break it. Now, what we have is a privatisation by stealth of our higher education system, especially, of course, down in England, and it's not even that stealthy.
But while privatisation is usually defined as a shift from state ownership and control over to private ownership and control, in the UK higher education system, there are huge question marks over whether higher education control has shifted over towards the private individuals who will now be funding it. That is to say, the students themselves. What we can't dispute is that the state in England has abdicated responsibility to provide any funding for something as historic and important as the humanities as a whole within universities. So £9,000 fees, as we know, has been introduced at most English and Welsh universities. And this already has had a knock-on effect on applications, with the recent news coming out that 15%, there's been a 15% fall in applications overall to universities. That was planned. It was planned. Dramatic. The lights are going out in a higher education system as we speak. I knew I shouldn't have said that bit at the beginning. So for those who say, well, is this really a problem? Aren't there too many people at university already? And are there the graduate jobs for them? I would respond two things. First of all, the increase in tuition fees, according to most studies and predictions, won't affect society and university applications across the board. It'll affect those from the lowest income backgrounds. Okay, so even those students who, and that is then to think, is it only those in a lower income background who should be considering whether or not they should go to university and whether or not instead perhaps they should take an apprenticeship? My opinion is that if we have to consider as a whole, as a society, whether we have enough, we have too many people in higher education, then it's society as a whole, from whatever class, from whatever socioeconomic background, who should be considering whether to take a different career route, whether to do an apprenticeship, whether to take up a different career which doesn't involve going into higher education. Secondly, we have over 1 million people under the age of 25 unemployed. Okay, so there's not a lot of jobs out there for young people. Those 15% who've decided not to apply for university, things aren't looking particularly rosy outside for them. Yes, the government recently, under pressure from the Lib Dems, has adopted a fund, or you know, a £1 billion fund for futures, but this doesn't even make up for the previous schemes under the Labour government. So the amount of money invested in creating jobs for young people. So what we've had adapted from England, or the example that's been set from last year, when you know we saw the biggest student protest in a generation, has been a system which is not only unfair, I would argue, on those lowest income, those from a lowest income background, but also chaotic. So changes like introducing core and margin places, where some universities can attract AAB students and others can attract more only if they cut their fees down to a certain level, have not been welcomed by anyone across the board, neither the Russell Group universities, nor the 1984 group, nor the Million Plus. So in Scotland, the government, we then had elections this year in Scotland, the SNP coming off a majority. Prior to getting elected, the SNP and Alex Salmond say rocks will melt under the sun before Scottish people have to pay to have an education. Now, at the time, it seemed very much like rocks will melt in the sun before students in Scotland will have to pay for an education. But of course, that was then refined and say, no, no, it's only Scottish students. And unfortunately, according to the Scottish government, by necessity, by EU law, European Union students will also not have to pay, whereas rest of UK students will have to pay just as much, and in fact more, than they would pay in other parts of the UK. It's a sad day today, not only because we've been shifted into the less glamorous location as opposed to the St Salvador's Quad, but also because today the Scottish Government's Education and Culture Committee met and actually confirmed and voted in favour of the government's plans for higher education, including £9,000 fees. So that was the final rubber stamp for the time being for the funding structure for 2012-13. So the £9,000 figure was adopted to great surprise, or introduced anyway, and Scotland as a whole, the day that me and Sam came into the job, actually, on the 1st of July, it was a nice little welcome for us. And that was thanks to aggressive lobbying by University Scotland, who were unhappy that they'd missed out on being able to charge everyone fees in Scotland, and that the political consensus had changed. So many argue that the Scottish Government policy for Rest of the UK students is conservative and Lib Dem higher education policy plus, in that the degree cap has been lifted to 36 instead of 27,000, and it includes none of the obligations regarding widening access for the time being. So the other things the Scottish Government have been doing, which have been slightly more progressive than their plans for Rest of the UK students, have been analysing and reviewing higher education governance, so seeing whether we should be electing the vice-chancellors and principals for the universities, looking at whether we can extend the position of the rector to non-ancient universities, and looking at whether students and other stakeholders are adequately represented within the institutions. Recent developments, as I've said, the Scottish Government today, Education and Culture Committee, including Marco Biaggi, ex-sabbatical here at St Andrews, voted in favour of the government's plans. Nevertheless, there's been some more positive developments thanks to lobbying by NUS and others, including ourselves. So looking at the year 2013-14, the Scottish Government wants to adopt a minimum income, for Scottish students, so we see the parochial nature of some of their policies, a minimum income for students of £7,000 per year. Also, it's probable that the Scottish Government will set up a Scottish Office for Fair Access, with universities having to sign up to access agreements as they do in England, but again, there's not a date set for that. And although the settlement for higher education institutions was more generous than many expected, and it actually made up for previous cuts and losses, which themselves were a justification for charging £9,000 fees, the settlement for colleges, and for many people in Scotland, for many from underprivileged background, an access route to universities and to higher education, colleges are under a lot of pressure. They've had £40 million cut from their budgets, and they've been forced into mergers across the board, which means that, and that's one of the reasons why the NUS has adopted that as their main campaign for this year, defending our future. Moving on to St Andrews, just to go over the figures, St Andrews has the percentage of Rest of the UK students at St Andrews is more than any other university. 36% makes up the largest constituent group, and Scottish students here make up just under 30%. This is for last year's figures. EU students make up 9%, and overseas students 25%. So what happened here, as everyone probably knows already, the university court voted in £9,000 fees, despite the fact that there was procedural irregularity in terms of the number of options which were promised to court and those which were offered in the end, despite the fact that all the student representatives on court voted against this and lobbied against it. This means a 500% increase for our UK students from the year 2012-13. So along with Edinburgh, we have the highest fees not only in Scotland or the UK for Rest of the UK students, but actually in the whole of Western Europe. A majority of students here, 61%, will now pay over £9,000 fees. St Andrews receives less public funding as a percentage of its total income than any other higher education institution in Scotland, which is a very interesting fact. So from the 2009-2010 figures, St Andrews, any guesses for how much of St Andrews' total funding came from the government purse? What percentage? Lady at the back? Yes. 20%. Okay, it's the actual figure. Is only 13% is public, whereas at the University of the West of Scotland, the figure was 59%. So this disparity shows the different challenges that each institution's facing. On the one hand, it could be positive and say St Andrews, well, it's diversified its income, so it's diversified how much money it's getting from tuition fees, mainly tuition fees, but also how much it's getting from philanthropic sources, etc. But also it's a risk. Now, the risk is, and this is why a lot of commentators in Scotland are saying over the long term, St Andrews is the most likely university to go private. It's not to scare anyone. We're not talking about this year. We're talking about years on in the future. If the Scottish Government introduces stricter laws and regulations around widening access, for example, there's obviously a bigger chance that St Andrews, rather than University of West of Scotland, will say, I'll wash my hands of that. No thanks very much. Too much red tape. And that's the impression that we've been getting from university management about public funding and about being a public institution. It's too much of a hassle, okay? So, freedom of information, we have to comply with that. Red tape, we need to apply for. As opposed to saying, actually, it's quite good that we're a public institution. It's quite good that we can actually be held accountable to the public through the government. So, obviously, I'd register huge opposition to any possibility of St Andrews going private, but you can see that's why people would be thinking that. As recently pointed out by Tristan himself in a Star News article, international students also pay a very large rate of tuition fees in St Andrews, and in fact contribute, despite the fact that they make up only 25% of the student body, contribute more in terms of pennies and pounds than rest of UK students at the moment, although that will change with £9,000 fees going up. So although the university's been talking about this £11,000 figure for how much it costs to educate a student, international students often pay 13 and a half or more, depending if they're studying medicine. It can go up to, I believe, around 20,000 roughly. So St Andrews has not only gone for the highest fees of any institution in Scotland, alongside Edinburgh, but it's also gone, decided not to include, the management not to include students in drawing up the bursaries package or drawing up until now a widening access package. Now, compared to institutions in England who have been equally as vocal in opposing fees, nevertheless, their institution have said, we will work with you on bursaries package and we'll make sure that there's a joint response from students and staff. So I'm kind of drawn to the end of some of these. Hopefully I've not hit you with too many facts here, but I'm kind of drawn to the end of it and saying, well, moving on to talk about, well, after Sam's given his paper as well, what have been the student response and what can the student response be in the future as well? So, of course, from our position and, you know, other student sabbaticals, we've lobbied the Scottish Government. We lobbied members of court. We drew up different papers, putting forward our points of view and trying to win that argument. On the other side, there's been various demonstrations. So recently we took students down to a demonstration in London, which was an anniversary of the large student protests from last year. Last week we were through a demonstration in Edinburgh where we were campaigning against rest of UK fees specifically being introduced in Scotland. We joined with sabbaticals from across Scotland as well. We've had the launch of the Scottish Students Against Cuts, so a mainly activist network, but also including sabbaticals, including like myself, sabbaticals from Edinburgh, sabbaticals from Glasgow School of Art, who have, you know, tried to organise more direct action or lobby more and take a stronger position than perhaps the NUS and others are able to do. There's also been a series of 36-hour occupations here in St Andrews, which the SRC voted to support, or in general they voted to support peaceful occupations as a legitimate method and one that can attract a lot of attention, especially where the official channels, so to speak, aren't being well regarded and listened to by university management. There, though, although it attracted media attention, the university refused to engage in any negotiations with the protesters. So in case it seems that I'm being too negative here, I think one thing that's important, a point I've came back to a few times, Ian McWhirter, who I met last week throughout the demonstration in Edinburgh, the rector of Edinburgh University, one of the chief political correspondent for the Herald, has said time and time again that the reason why he thinks that tuition fees weren't introduced across the board in Scotland for everyone, the reason why there was a graduate tax, and at various moments it looked like they were going to be, according to Ian McWhirter, it's because of the student protests in England, coupled with the risk of them happening here in Scotland, coupled with the various polls that have shown that Scottish public opinion is in favour of a publicly funded higher education system. The combination of those two factors is the reason why the political consensus shifted, not only in the SNP but also in Labour, if people remember before the elections. So we are having an influence. But of course, we need to carry on winning and fighting the battle of ideas and also the practical battles against fee increases. We need a tactical discussion in order to swing back the debate in our direction. So I want to leave you with a series of questions. Where now for the student movement as a whole? So for example, occupation, student protests, are they a powerful tactic? Is it more a question of lobbying courts? Is it a question of lobbying government? Is it a combination of all of the above? Should we only be focusing on our institutions, St Andrews as a unique example? Should we be focusing on higher education in Scotland as a whole or the UK, given the different panorama that we've mentioned? Should we focus on higher education, or should we be joining together with the colleges and saying no, widening access is an agenda which draws in FE and HE, and we should all be in this together and supporting our brothers and sisters in the colleges, who are often under a lot more pressure than us? On the eve of the strike tomorrow and the industrial actions in the UCU, should we be acting as students, or should we also be joining together with staff I don't mean these to be an either-or questions. Quite often, they can combine together. How do we encourage not only sabbaticals and key activists, but the student body as a whole to participate and get more involved in these debates and actions and in lobbying? And how can we effectively lobby the government, university courts and others so that our points of view are taken into account and so that we can be a large and important part of those discussions? So I started off today by saying that this was a sad day because this was the Scottish Government's proposals on Rest the UK fees were voted through at the Education Committee. But also it's a happy day in St Andrews anyway, as myself and the Proctor and a few others put the finishing touches to the plans for the Student Association redevelopment, which will then go to park later on in early December. A £12 million redevelopment, which we're all reasonably confident will go ahead and definitely has the support of the principal's office. So how is it that we have these such divergent views on higher education and on funding or on fees, and yet we can come together and put our pens together or whatever and sign together documents on the student experience? And I think that it just shows how there's a kind of divergence. So on the one hand, yes, there's support from the student experience from the university management and others, and we can work together on those points. But in other areas, students must come forward by ourselves on issues of defending public education, joining together with staff tomorrow and joining hands as opposed to lifting up barricades and bringing in private security, for example. Students across the board have been the ones who've been reclaiming the role of universities as a large part of civil society, not only there as a factory so that students can churn in through, but also as a focal point for employment, as people who can go out into the community and do good work and encourage kids from colleges and everywhere else to come in into higher education. So whilst some university management's become more insular and focusing on the institutional goals, I think it's the responsibility, Matt Tuppensworth anyway, is that it's responsibility of the student movement and students to step outside of the bubble, into the community, defending higher education, public education, and our role reclaiming and fighting for this lost generation and making sure that they get university places, but also that there's jobs later on for them. Thank you.
Thanks. Can I take a few any questions of clarification on those facts? We're going to open up the open up the debate in a second. But first, can I get any clarification issues? Well done, Patrick. You're incredibly clear. I just take I think 3 points on that, and then we'll move on. I'll put my two tuppence worth in, and then we'll have a much wider debate. Anyone want to start talking about Patrick? He's just walking out.
I think just as a point about the change of venue and stuff like that. Thanks. I think just as a point about the change. Is this on?
Radio mic. It's a radio mic.
Brilliant. I understand that it's frustrating that they've changed the venue and things like that, but over graduation in the summer, the quad was shut off and guarded the night before graduation as well. Like, you can understand the security concerns that the university has. I mean, it takes one nutter to ruin everyone's graduation. And while we all have very legitimate concerns about being kept in the loop about these kinds of things, I think you have to be kind of measured in your response to how the university behaves. They should have let us know, but also they have to be aware of everyone's safety and the safety of everyone who's graduating tomorrow and make sure that everything's okay. Like, having three burly guys saying you can't get in is obviously not what you want, but you have to be realistic about these things sometimes, I think.
Do you want me to come back in?
No, should we take just a couple more points and then we'll... Jana?
I guess just the issue coming back to that, I don't agree necessarily that it is about safety and health and safety. I think that that is an issue and that it certainly is something everyone at the university should take into consideration. But I also think it's a very odd circumstance that we have basically booked that space, correct? And if it were an outside organisation, not within the university, who'd booked that space for a corporate event or whatever, I really doubt that would have happened to us. I think it's very suspect that the people who often get treated the worst by this university are the people within it, and that corporate organizations coming into it are the ones who are given more consideration when it comes to booking spaces particularly. And I think I've encountered that before. So I think that it definitely should be taken into consideration when we're talking about the subject.
I'll take one more point from Chloe.
Thanks. Yeah, I was just going to say that on that note, if we are saying that the people that we see as being treated the worst in this university are the students, then it's probably a very good thing that we have a staff and student movement that will jointly come together and say we are the university, not the management. And so I think tomorrow should be really good. And I think it's an interesting debate, but I think we should be more clear that we're not saying should staff and students be together, because as far as I'm concerned, they definitely should.
Should I come back in, or are you going to?
No, that's after. Would you want to open it up after? I want to ask you two questions, and I'd like to share with you a couple of my thoughts about the answers. It is, what is the purpose of higher education? And is St Andrews, and indeed the rest of the sector, delivering on this purpose? I wasn't sure how to put this to you. I spent some time thinking about the other things that could be seen as the purpose of university education. You know, employability, simple love of learning, perhaps you just had a few grand kicking around, didn't know what to do with it. These are all good reasons, genuinely. But for what I'm asking, they may be slightly self-centred. Don't be offended by that. I didn't phrase the question properly the first time, because I'm not asking why you're here. I'm asking why we're here. Stephen, I'd like to talk a little bit about society. Now, I'm an individualist, but without society, the individual is nothing. Without the rest of the society around them, a rugged individual is just a guy who's got himself lost. So what I'm asking tonight is, what is the purpose of higher education fundamentally? It's not an easy answer. It begs another question. What do we actually think society needs? Now, I don't want to get into a partisan divide. I think two of the fundamental things you need in society are innovation to drive it forward and democracy to keep it accountable. And I believe that fundamentally, higher education provides both these things. And I want you to look past the facts that you learn and ask what you're learning to do with them. From history to physics, education teaches us to look past the orthodoxies, to draw conclusions based on what the evidence means, not what people tell you it means. It gives you the confidence to raise that challenge in an articulate way, and in seeing that what we achieve when we can do this, it inspires us to achieve ever more. I think you see this as well when you get over the myth that creativity is confined to the arts, or logic and evidence-based thinking confined to the sciences. I'm pretty sure that E.H. Carr, considered by many to be the founder of realism in international relations, tied himself pretty closely to the evidence when he wrote What is History? And challenged an orthodoxy in historical study that had lasted since Thucydides. And that Stephen Hawking's creative faculties were working in overdrive when he challenged his own orthodoxy on black holes. Education shouldn't just teach us philosophy or biology. It should teach us to question our leaders and each other, and that's the essence of democracy. And it should teach us to see past the confines of orthodoxy, to truly innovate and maybe even lead ourselves. But is it doing it right now? Is higher education delivering? It's my belief that the answer is ever more no. And it's getting worse. In striving to make higher education suitable for the demands of the modern world, we are sacrificing its essence. It's death by a thousand cuts, and it's us, the next generation, who are the ones that are bleeding. We're compromising our fundamental purpose. Funding is just the tip of the iceberg. It's true, there is a crisis in higher education funding, but this is not the only issue. We're not just compromising those whom we're teaching, we're in danger of compromising that which we teach. Across the country, business and industry are complaining that universities are not producing the graduates they need, and they're being heard at the very highest levels. But in seeking to satisfy those complaints, we're in danger of allowing our curriculum to be ever more defined by the demands of business. The government's white paper, putting the student at the heart of education, pushes universities to meet students' expectations and produce quantifiable results that they're doing so. Now, to a certain extent, this should be a positive thing. And the cry has certainly been taken up very enthusiastically by different student representatives. It's true, it's leverage. But what the government and university managements and even student representatives has lost sight of is that indefinable quality in education. In meeting the expectations of 100 different voices, we're losing the chance to think for ourselves. In meeting the demands of business in our curriculum, we compromise the chance to give business what it really needs, unique thinkers. If business or the public sector gets to define university education, then where will they find the people who will come up with the ideas that are different, the innovation that drives both forward? What do you think consultancy is one of the highest paid professions in the world? It's because there is a shortage of people who can think outside the box. The market itself is showing us that it needs something different. And as for student expectations, yes, there is a level on which universities should seek to meet our expectations. But there is also a level that we should be incredibly disappointed if that's all they do. We need the unknown, the unexpected. Higher education should not meet our expectations, it should define them. And the main criteria for a university should not be the number of computers or the opening hours for the library. It should be the inspiration of its teaching, the courage of its debate, the ideas of its students. If we continue down our current path, there is a danger that higher education will be reduced to just a service or a commodity. One of my briefing books last week included a paper which said that University of St Andrews sees it as in our interests to support the marketisation of higher education. I'm telling you tonight, it's not in our interests. It's in the interests of those people who don't want to be questioned, who don't want to see you challenge them, who don't want to see you do better than them. Innovate where they could never even conceive. Inspire where they could only bully. You know who I'm talking about. It's in their interest, not in ours. So, what can we as students do? We need to take some responsibility. We need to stop saying, I'm just a student, this problem is too big for me. Or, it's not appropriate that I speak up. We need to make this an issue. We need to make it our issue. Academics, management, even to the government, they're all under pressure to deliver student expectations. They think that's all we want. And they've forgotten about the big things too. So we need to keep asking for the new library, for more books, for a new union. But we need to ask for the bigger things as well. We need to demand our professors and lecturers are empowered. We need to ask why the people who are trying to educate the next generation are not even valued enough to give them a decent wage or a comfortable retirement. And to that end, we need to get out on that street tomorrow and support the strike. But we need to do more than just shouting outside the windows, more than just look in on the corridors of power. We need to be part of the debate. We need the courage to find the solutions ourselves and then tell everybody about them. We must engage. During the IUK fees debate, Patrick and I wrote a paper called Fairness Not Fee Hikes. This paper was signed by sabbaticals at 10 other universities in Scotland. To my knowledge, it was the only attempt made at the time to find an alternative to a wholesale rise in IUK fees. Students did that. We came up with the idea. When management rejected it, we found a compromise. When they rejected that, we found a hole in their figures that could total up to £1 million per year, and then we persuaded them to devote it to widening access. We do have something to contribute to the issues, all of us. We need the courage to do so. We also need to see the bigger picture. Fee hikes have happened. Yes, we should still be angry, but we also need to move on. We must raise our expectations. We must demand that the university expects more of us, and that doesn't mean raising the pass mark by 2. It means pushing us to excel beyond the marking scale, to excel every day. It means pushing us to surprise them. And we need to expect more of ourselves and of each other as well. It's always appropriate to speak up. It's never a problem that's too big to talk about. No one else is going to do it for you. This needs to be our issue now. It needs to be the issue of the next union election. When you're campaigning alongside promising to deliver quicker feedback or cheaper accommodation, remember to tell people why you're doing it. But don't wait until March. Do it tomorrow. tell your lecturer, tell the principal, tell your friends. This university does need to live up to its students' expectations, and those expectations need to be pretty damn high. Thanks. Right. So we've given you a lot to think about. I imagine you've all got plenty to say on the subject. So we're going to open the floor up to debate.
Bring it on. Yep, at the back.
I might stand up. I want to, like, there's just a general point I'd like to address and put outside. We complain that sometimes student representation is lowered and administration doesn't hear us. But and you, Patrick, you said that accountability is actually better when the university gets most of its funding public funding from the state, which I don't really get because current university policies and regulations are very, very state-based. So in essence, what are you guys doing in order to improve? Like, we will get more power over the way that we structure like our governance in the future because there will be less state funding. What are you guys doing to take that from the state and give it to the students directly instead of making them keep it?
We can go on and talk about this now, but one of the points, the next point that was going to be raised was about accountability from Anthony.
And there is a...
No, but I mean in general, like governance, like right now the university is like the
general like hierarchy of universities in the UK is state, like it's not something that a university can decide. Like the board can decide to change like radically. A lot of those things are limited on funding. So what are you guys doing to change that?
The last item on this agenda is actually sabbatical question time, and I don't want to make the whole of this thing all about me and Patrick. So let's just throw that open as a question to the floor. What do you think we should do? Do you think we should take power away? Do you think taking power away from the state gives more power for students, or do you think it actually gives us less power? Do you think we should then try and take power from the state? Probably shouldn't talk to you loudly about that, sedition. But you know the point. Let's hear you.
I mean, yeah, I think it would be interesting because the government's obviously, the UK government, its white paper has said, you know, putting students at the heart of the system. Do people believe that by increasing fees, that puts students and gives you more choice and more power and does really put people at the heart of the system?
Yeah, I do. I believe that we become more of a customer then the university will have to listen, because when we are going to be paying £9,000 to take a couple of examples from earlier, and 2 hours of lectures a week isn't going to be good enough. I want to know where my money's going and what I'm getting back for it. Whereas at the moment, £1,500 is a lot, but it seems that people are like, well, you know, state's paying for it, I'll happily take 2 hours. And I think maybe with this tuition fee rise, actually, we are going to make the university sort of talk a bit more and tell us, and kind of more accountable, and that's what we're coming on to talk about later. But in that sense, yeah, I do.
Yep.
I agree with the point made before that it's important for students to have more input in terms of things like, especially for art students, you know, contact hours and things like that. We all know it's not ideal. But what about sort of the bigger issue of the people who can't get in that position? What about the people who can't pay £9,000 a year, the people who slip through the bursary net, and the people who should go to university and should be able to put themselves in the best positions that their kids can go to university? If they don't get the opportunity to do that, then there's something fundamentally wrong with the higher education system, because surely that's the point. And I think that's something that really needs to be borne in mind. Well, it's great for the people who can afford it. What about the people who can't?
What I meant was, right now we get a certain amount of money from the state, and we will get less if we don't follow certain rules, like taking in a certain amount of UK students, or not taking in more than a certain amount of UK students. The universities get fined, and they get less funding. So, like,
as we get less state funding, the universities and the students especially should be asking for less restrictions on things that limit our power of choice as a university. If the state is only giving me 13% of the total endowment of the university, then I want more. I want to be able to decide a lot more things. Are there general changes in the way that like governance and things work because of the tuition fees, or are we asking for them? Because we should be asking for more representation if we're getting more, if we're paying more, and the state it should be getting less choice in how the university is represented. If I'm paying more, I want St. Andrews to look more like I want, not more like Westminster wants or like Holyrood wants.
I just have a quick point. I just want to mention that I personally don't really think that paying more equates to more of a student voice in any context. I don't think that we've ever seen that. So that's all.
I don't fully understand what's necessarily going on in terms of representation between us and the United Kingdom's government. But from a basic logical point of view, it would seem that if we were to become a private university, it would eliminate the amount of lobbying that, for example, you two have had to do with your fairness, not fee hikes, that could go directly to the board of the university instead of going to the, not only the board, but also and the educational governance system.
I want to say that in response to that, universities aren't really, if a university was private, it would be less democratic than it already is. Like, at the moment, this university, in my opinion, doesn't function very democratically. Like, I don't believe that, because we don't elect, Louise Richardson or whichever the principal is, they have no impetus to do stuff that would necessarily be in the interest of the students, apart from, I'm just kind of gesticulating a lot, so. So it doesn't really make sense. The only kind of democratic link we have at the moment is to the state, because at least people can lobby government machinery in order to try and change what happens in universities. But if they were just private, it would be completely up to them whether they did want to have any democratic procedures or not.
Worry about how we interpret David Willett's excuse to sell our education. That I very much feel like he's just trying, this is just a blatant excuse to say, tell us that we, by paying 9,000 fees, we actually gonna get something more out of it. But I feel that we as a whole, as a society, gonna lose out on this. We're gonna lose talented students. We're gonna lose the feeling that education used to be open for us, and I think there's just a lot of blatant lies the government is making to make us believe that we need to pay those fees while they're making huge cuts into education. That's one of the most important things that a country should invest in.
I also think it's important, as Sam said, that we need to have people who are innovating within our university, going to what Gabriel said about having a more private university. I think that we could come up with a solution that involves a private university where we have more say over what's happening whilst we are students at the university and lowering fees at the same time. I don't think that a private university necessarily has to go right with having 12,000, 15,000, or if we want to go to an American example, 55,000. Pounds or dollars to attend university. I think that we can come up with a compromise that also promotes more student democracy. And I think we should be looking for that instead of this is one path that we can take and this is the other. There must be some sort of hybrid that we can find.
I mean, I've jumped the gun in the old privatization debate. We're not quite there yet, but it's an interesting, it's an interesting debate to have.
I remember last year that at the principal's open forum, actually, I think she took the opportunity to install the virtues of countries who are investing in their education system publicly. So then it's very interesting to note the difference between a public thing that was a forum open to students, and they were saying, you know, public investment in education is great, and then as Sam quoted, there was, you know, papers from the universities questioning, you know, is the marketization the route actually down? So there does seem to be mixed messages coming from different parts of government generally, but I'd say within the university even, about what really is the strategy that people should be adopting.
Yeah, I mean, on the last point, I think the bulk of the lobbying strategy of the university and of University of Scotland has been, over the last number of years, let's lobby the government so we can free up our ability to charge a lot of fees and have variability in fees, and, you know, have a market where universities can charge variable fees at different levels, instead of a joint voice together where they could have joined together with students and with the unions and the UCU and say, no, let's have funding for public funding for higher education. Now, I'm not saying that they never say that. I'm not saying that when they do get extra public funding that, you know, that they don't like it. But the bulk of the strategy has been asking for a graduate tax at the very least, or for tuition fees, or for something else, rather than having a public debate and coming out in public and saying we want more funding because we believe in a publicly funded education, higher education system. Just to come back in on one of the points as well, this question of, do we have more control, do we have more power? I think that the individual and collective power is an interesting way to look at it as well, because even if it were true that as individuals we can shape shape university courses, you know, by paying a certain amount, and maybe we could get the extra tutorial a week that we all want, that's at an individual level. But as again, in that individual level, which is, you know, linked to how much money you've got and your spending power, so inevitably is, you know, potentially anyway, unequal if there was a complete free playing field in terms of how much people paid when they're at university. Are you gaining that, potentially gaining a power at the expense of your collective voice? Because they don't talk about, on the one hand, where they say students have more power, you're at the heart of the system. On the other hand, you're introducing a system which the National Union of Students and students' associations across the country and your ordinary student on the street, out protesting in the street, is against. So you're saying you have more power, but not the power to discuss the big issues that we're talking about, that we're trying to talk about here. You've got the power through your spending power to decide on some of the smaller issues related to your course. And I think that's a shame, and I think it's part of an agenda of individualization, which I'm against.
Hi. I'm not sure I can say that we would all agree with this, because it's a big room and that feels like a big statement, but I do think that hopefully the majority of people in here would say that the most important issue facing this university right now is whether or not the best qualified and the most deserving students will be able to attend. And I think that's the biggest issue that comes before money and funding and facilities and this and that, is whether or not students that deserve it should be able to attend regardless of their family's income. I also think it would be quite a shame to completely condemn the principles of marketization. I do think that they can quite well go along with ideas of creativity and innovation as well, depending on how they're seen out. As an American student, I can quite safely say that America's higher education system has a lot to improve, but out of all the students that attend, half of them are on some form of scholarship or bursary. A third of them are getting an entire full ride. And clearly the UK has progressed differently, and some would say much, much better. Your universities are incredible. But I think the biggest issue here isn't necessarily that we condemn marketization full stop of education. It's that the system that has now been put in place is going to stop deserving students from going to university. And if a system could be organized so that schools could bring in more money, regardless of how they're doing it, and the deserving students are still going, that'd be fantastic. But I think what we really need to discuss is, for whatever reason, this university's unwillingness to consider providing more bursaries and scholarships than they really should be.
I don't know if I've just wildly misunderstood the bursary scheme, but I know in the initial email the principal sent to everyone announcing they'd be bringing in these tuition fees, she said that all RUK students whose household income is less than £42,000 per year would receive £7,500 a year, which means that they'd be paying less than what they do now, from my understanding. Is that happening?
No.
That isn't to do with the tuition fees. It's to do with living costs. So they've gone down the road of living costs. But the interesting thing with that scheme is that if you're at the bottom end of how much you might be able to get, I don't know if you've got the email there, but if you're at the bottom end of the scale, so if you're at the very bottom, the university will actually give you less money than if your household income is just below £42,500. That's because the government already, the UK government for rest of UK students already, would give the highest loan and then would supplement it sometimes with a grant. So actually it goes from the university giving £200 to top up to the 7,000 level, to the lowest, those from a lowest family income background, and then given up to £2,000 for those who just come under the £42,500. So we've since found out that that's been drawn up in coordination with the officer, for the person in charge of widening access, who's Mike Johnson. So it's quite interesting that he's chosen to go down that road of offering more money to the squeezed middle, so to speak. But it's a focus on living costs as opposed to tuition fee waivers.
Why are we not being told about this by the people who are making these decisions? When I got that email, I assumed that that was what the situation was, and while it wasn't perfect, it was something. But I mean, when were we going to be told about this, and whose job is it to tell us this? Because I feel like the student body needs to be aware of this stuff. It's all very well for us to sit in a room and talk about these things, but 99.9% of students at St Andrews have no idea about this kind of thing. How do we address that problem? And how do we make sure that people are involved and know what's going on? Because I think there'd be a lot of people who'd be pretty pissed off to find that out.
I'm going to hand that over to Anthony and Ella in their next topic of the agenda. Hopefully we should get into that in a lot of detail.